This is the Fox Football Podcast, proudly brought to you by McDonald's.
Yes, welcome to the Fox Football Podcast with thanks to McDonald's. Yes, I know the sting hasn't been updated. Please forgive me for that. We've got a special podcast for you today. I'm sure you will forgive us. Can't wait for this one. Simon Hill's been good enough to join me, Daniel Garb.
Looking good forward to see you, Garby.
Today, Simon, she'll be a beauty because we've got a very special guest today.
We do indeed. A former Newcastle United defender who's about to star in the Hyundai A-League.
Stephen Taylor is going to be our special guest. For those that don't know, every team comes into the Fox Sports offices. They do their promotional shoots ahead of the season. All those glitzy graphics that you see, they don't happen by accident. A lot of people put a lot of hard work in behind the scenes for those. And so Wellington's in the building today. We're going to grab Stephen Taylor in a moment and have a chat about why he's gone to the Phoenix and also his life and times at Newcastle, which I've got a feeling will be an enthralling chat, so thoroughly looking forward to it.
It should be a great listen.
Okay, let's cover off some of the main issues bubbling about in Australian football first, though, and then we'll get on to Stevie Taylor. FFA Cup quarterfinals, we're halfway through. Wins for Sydney FC and for Western Sydney last week. We've got a couple of beauties coming up this week, of course. Apia and Adelaide United in the quarterfinal on Wednesday night, and also Heidelberg and Bentley Greens doing battle. So yeah, hopefully Apia can match the scenes, sorry to Adelaide fans, but match the scenes of their victory over the victory, because that was something special. And hey, giant killings in the cup are always great.
Well, that's what makes the cup, you know, it's such a great story when you have these shocks. Now, that's not to say that Apia will be able to do it again. Of course, we know how good they were in the last round against Melbourne Victory. But since then, of course, they've had their grand final, lost it for the second year in a row, incidentally, against Sydney Olympic. Congratulations to them, NPL New South Wales title winners. But they've had a bit of a break since then, which, to be honest, might just do them some good, because they played an awful lot of matches in a short space of time. The problem for Apia is they've lost a lot of players along the way this season, so they're a little bit light on numbers. And as we say, they are now officially out of season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go. They are at home, theoretically, even though Leichhardt Oval is not their actual home. And again, they'll have, you know, a decent crowd behind them. It's all about what Adelaide do. If they play to their potential as the full-time outfit, they should win. But, you know, as we've seen before, particularly this season with Apia and with Bentley Greens over Wellington Phoenix, you know, the shocks can happen. So could be an interesting night.
Massive week for Heidelberg. They won the NPL Championship in Victoria on the weekend. Now they've got their FFA Cup quarterfinal coming up. So a huge week for them. Just reflecting on last week a touch. Avondale, you know, gave it a great push against Sydney FC, and it was a wonderful night. Liam Boland, what a story he is, scoring again in the Cup. I reckon, though, obviously that was the main game and publicised for obvious reasons. But Western Sydney's win, for mine, was crucial as well, because you know, they could be a big story potentially this season. And we've spoken about perhaps the crowds dropping off a bit. A lot of that was down to the Wanderers, you know, dropping from their high standards from seasons before. It was a part of that. I mean, that was a big moment for mine, for Marcus Babbel, to get confidence going into the semi-finals of the Cup and taking a big scalp in Melbourne City.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, not only that, there is now the possibility that we could have an all-Sydney semi-final. Now, if that happens, all of a sudden, you know, you've got a big hype in Australia's biggest city in terms of population, and the Wanderers have that sniff of a trophy again. We know they got to the semi-finals last year when they lost to Adelaide United, but you know, a Sydney derby would be something huge. And obviously for Marcus Babbel, he's trying to build things there. And you know, I like the look of some of his new signings, Baum Johan in particular.
Yeah.
And it was a big statement to go to Melbourne City, who are again probably expected to be one of the challengers for the A-League title again this season, and to come away with a win. That's you know, that'll give them an awful lot of confidence.
Yeah, I think they're building nicely. That was the first big moment for mine, for Marcus Babbel, to get things going and get them some belief ahead of the season. And let's look at some of the Aussies abroad, and who knows, maybe this player will be an Aussie abroad to watch in years to come. This is a really interesting story that's developing. Martin Boyle, who plays at Hibernian with Jamie McLaren and Mark Milligan. Forgive Australian fans for not having heard of him before, but he could be a Socceroo very soon. His father was born in Sydney, and he is well and truly on the radar of Graham Arnold, and it could come down to a battle between Scotland and Australia for him come the next window in October?
Very interesting one. I mean, you look at his stats. He's played, I think, 100 games or thereabouts for Hibs, scored 20-odd goals. He scored again at the weekend against Dundee and put on an assist. He's clearly in good form. He is a right winger by trade. I don't know where that leaves Matthew Lecky or Robbie Cruz. One of those would probably have to miss out. Maybe Lecky switching over to the left if he was to be selected, if he was to actually start a game for Australia. But, you know, clearly Graham Arnold is interested. Neil Lennon has admitted that Hibs manager he's had a conversation with Arnie already about him. So, you know, clearly, like Ange Postecoglou before him, he's not going to leave any stone unturned in finding, you know, maybe hidden gems that we didn't really know about. And let's be honest, Boyle certainly comes in that category.
Oh, yeah.
Because you look at his birthplace, he was born in Aberdeen. You know, you have no semblance of the fact that he has Australian heritage. So, you know, if he's a diamond in the rough, then great. You know, he could contribute.
I've had a really good chat with Gavin Ray for foxsports.com.au him, which I stumbled on this.
Is he still at Hakoa?
He's the manager of Hakoa, for those that don't know. Former Scottish international, played in the FA Cup final for Cardiff many a year ago against Portsmouth, when Portsmouth won it. So a well-credentialed footballer. I stumbled across this just chatting to Gavin about something else, that he's best mates with Martin Boyle. They play together in the lower leagues in Scotland. And he was with him at the time. He said, Martin Boyle said to me, "Hey, mate, my dad's born in Australia. Do you think that qualifies me potentially for the Socceroos?" They did some research together and they realised that, yes, it does, and that legally he can play for Australia. So I've had a chat with Gavin about how good Martin Boyle is and whether he can actually make it for the Socceroos. He says he is lightning quick, and that is the reason why he would be an asset for Australia. I then said, well, a lot of people listening right now would go, hang on, if you're good enough for Australia, surely you're good enough for Scotland. Why haven't you been picked by them? They're pretty much on the same level in international football, or near enough. And he said, I don't know why Scotland haven't picked him. Honestly, he's good enough for them. So it could come down to, and there have been reports in Scotland at the moment that they're actually looking at him for the next international window. So it literally could come down to both countries picking him and Martin Boyle having a choice and maybe saying, Scotland's ignored me. Yeah. All right, I'll take Australia, because he is 25 now.
Always remember as well, and this it can be a factor, maybe less so in the modern era, but it can be a factor. You know, when you play for Australia, you play Asian qualifiers in places like Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, Japan, Korea, home games in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide, you know, Perth. You know, there's a lot of travel involved. And sometimes you can get, I'm not saying that Boyle would necessarily look at that and go, oh, I don't fancy that. But sometimes your managers or your agents or people around you will be saying, listen, mate, you don't want to be going flying 24 hours and missing 3 days, you know, going playing off for Australia. I'm not saying that that's definitively the case, but that can be a factor. Certainly was in the past. I mean, that's why the likes of Tony DiRigo, Craig Johnston, you know, didn't play for Australia, because back in the day, you know, the travel to Australia was just seemed, you know, it was a country that was so far away, it didn't bear thinking about. So, you know, that could be an issue. Interesting you mentioned Gavin Ray, because, of course, there is another young potential Australian international, Alexander Robertson, who is currently playing for Manchester City.
And in Gavin Ray's levels. Nephew.
And Gavin Ray's nephew. And, of course, I'm sure he knows Mark Robertson, his dad, who used to play very briefly at Sydney FC, but was also with Hakoa until they moved the entire family over to the UK to be with Alexander, who is a very highly rated youngster, doing very well for Man City, but has already represented England at junior level. So another potential tug of war. And I'm told that his agent is a certain Michael Owen.
Interesting. Well,
maybe that might have an impact as
maybe.
Well.
The FFA tried to bring him into the camp in Turkey recently, 15 years of age. I mean, that is how talented he is. He was at Man United, and Man City actually poached him from United.
He went to the right club, yeah.
But the word is that England are trying hard to get him into their ranks as well, even at his age. So right now, his father's played for Australia, so hopefully he chooses the Socceroos if it comes down to that. The word out of his family connections is he's so young, we're not even worrying about it too much right now. And if you do play for youth teams for another nation, the history will tell you it doesn't actually hinder you. Not, hinder your chances at all of playing for another country. Rhys Williams played for the Wales under 21s, I think, and then played for Australia. It's all about getting experience. Yeah. They're happy for him to get experience for England youth teams. Doesn't mean he won't play for Australia in the future.
He's also eligible for Peru because his mother's got Peruvian heritage, and for Scotland, as you would imagine, with a name like Alexander Robertson.
Exactly
he'd
right.
He'd have to be eligible for Scotland, wouldn't he?
Couple of quick things to touch on before we bring in our special guest. Harry Kewell voted to the Sports Australia Hall of Fame. How great's that to have a footballer involved in those ranks and those esteemed names?
You know, this is something that doesn't come across our radar very often, the Sport Australia Hall of Fame. But when this was announced, I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder who else is in there from football. You know, this is the first one in 22 years, and we only have seven people from our code ever to be voted into the Sport
Australia. That's madness. Well,
and I looked through the list, and this is no slight on these other sports, but there are lots of sailors in there, swimmers, netballers, you know, tiddlywinks, synchronised marble throw. For goodness sake. And we only have seven people in there? Are you serious? There's no Mark Schwarzer. There's no Mark Viduka.
That's not right.
Tim Cahill, I think you have to actually be retired, don't you, to be voted in. So maybe Timmy will be in the future. But anyway, look, at least it started. And Harry is a very worthy entrant into the Australian Hall of Fame for me. Not necessarily our most successful soccerer in terms of what he did at international level, but I think in terms of talent and what he did at club level, because obviously he did win a Champions League with Liverpool back in 2005. You know, that takes some beating. And I think he's, you know, he's probably skill-wise our best ever player. Don't know if you agree.
Yeah, him and Mark Viduka, talent-wise, for mine.
Agree with
you. You could throw in maybe a Mark Bosnich, Ned Zelic, Paul Okon potentially, but those two in terms of what they achieved over a long period of time, talent-wise, yes. I think Tim, for his achievements, got us to that level.
Didn't Mark Schwarzer win back-to-back Premier League medals, even though he sat on the bench for most of them, for Chelsea and Leicester?
He did, actually, yes.
I mean, where's he in the Australia sport?
Well, there should be an advocate.
Sporting Hall of Fame.
Someone who's pushing our players to get in there more regularly. Maybe Riley McGree will be in the Sports Australia Hall of Fame one day. Certainly, if he wins the Pushkas Award, that could be the case. Now, by the time you're listening to this, that might be done and dusted. In fact, there's a fair chance it will be. But hopefully, Simon, Riley McGree is awarded the Pushkas Award winner for the best goal in world football over the last 12 months.
It would be nice, wouldn't it? For the scorpion kick goal, of course, we're talking about against Melbourne City in last year's finals. Strangely enough, he's now playing for Melbourne City. Look, fantastic goal. We've seen it all a million times. Always worth a rerun. He's up against some tough competition. Cristiano Ronaldo, I think he's got a couple of entrants in there. Leo Messi, great team goal. Gareth Bale's effort in the European Cup final. Sorry about that, Garby. So there's stiff competition, but if Riley was to take the trophy, that would be a feather in the cap, not just of him and of the Newcastle Jets, but also for the Hyundai A-League as well.
As I said, could be decided by the time you're listening to this. If so, well, hopefully it was Riley's name that was called out. If not, it's still a goal we'll remember for many a year. Yeah, well, as we mentioned, we've got a very special edition of the podcast this week because we've got a special guest, Stephen Taylor. One of the recruits of the Wellington Phoenix is in here at Fox Sports today for the promotional shoots, and we've been good enough to grab him and bring him in for a podcast chat. Steve, great to see you. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Absolute delight to be here.
Mate, it was great to see you as one of the players that was recruited to the A-League for the upcoming season. It's been a fantastic off-season of recruitment. Yours came early on, and everyone's delighted to have you on board. Just talk us through how it happened for you. What was the initial conversation like? What was your thought process about the move to the A-League?
Speaking to a lot of ex-players, managers, and people who have played the league in the A-League, had a good chat with Michael Bridges. You know, obviously played for my hometown club in Newcastle, and he's obviously been out here, lived out here for a while, understood the league, and I had a good chat with him over the summer. Spent a lot of time out in Dubai training. And the challenge that came was it had to be something that wet my lips. There was this European kind of factor. Would you go out in Europe and sit in a mid-table kind of team and just happy for time to take on? Or do you want to set a challenge for yourself and test yourself? And all my career has been on challenges. And I came in Newcastle when I was 16 years old, seven centre-halves ahead of me. And I believed I got the opportunity. I'll take it. And I got that opportunity. I never looked back. And I wanted something that was going to get us back to testing me out. And understood it was a tough season last year for Wellington. And now this is the opportunity for me to hopefully be a part of something special.
You said that during your days in England, particularly over the last 5 years, with the timing of the A-League, the games were on live on Sky. I think they're now on BT. But, you know, they were at a good time of day where players would be going into training and actually watching a lot of these games. So you learned about the league by watching it as much as anything else.
Yeah, I think a lot of people over here are very surprised to hear that as well. But when you go in the morning, you get there early. And on Sky, they'd always show the highlights of the games out in the A-League. And you can see, I think from 5 years ago, I would go back to is the quality from there to now, every year is just getting better and better. All the teams are having a right go, look at the signings. And for a defender coming out here, it's going to be very difficult. You're going to be playing against the best of the best. Mm. The tackers who come out here, the marquee signings, as they say out here, it's going to be a tester. But that's what football is part and parcel all about. And I think anybody in this league can beat anybody. As I showed last year, I was looking at a lot of games that the teams were playing and it looked very open, very transition kind of game, similar to what the MLS is like. And the way football is like back in the UK, you look at the Premier League now, how open it is. Teams at the bottom are beating teams at the top. And it's literally who wants it more. And for me now to come out to an exciting league at a great time for the A-League is... it's a great opportunity for myself and it's a challenge I can't wait to start.
And what have you made of Wellington per se? Because I'm sure you're aware now there's been a lot of controversy around Wellington. They've had their problems recently. There's been talk about their future. What's it like inside the four walls of that dressing room right now, inside that club, especially under a new manager in Mark Rudin?
Yeah, that's one of the things Mark Rudin, when he rang me up in the summer, we had a good discussion before he came here and what had been said about the team, the squad, and what's happened in the past has happened. You know, what he's brought now is a winning mentality. You know, he wants winners at this football club, and I think it's a whole new change, a new era, and a new chapter for a lot of the lads. They know it, and they've made it very clear to the young boys as well. If you don't perform within the year, you're gone. And that's the nature of football, and just to try to drill in there, that's how it is back home, and people think it's you're safe. If you have a few bad games, oh, it'll be okay. You've got to give it everything. And I think it's how you live your life off the pitch as well as on the pitch, is training and getting the lads into good habits. And I've just seen a massive difference from when I first started the football to now, and how much I think off the pitch helps. Looking after the nutrition has been huge for us, and seeing the lads in the great shape. I think it shows in the training. The stats are high compared to the overall years they've had. And it's been a new kind of look to the Wellington Phoenix. The players, the managers bring in, are definitely hungry. People have points to prove, and I know the lads from last year are hurt, so it's going to be something different for the Wellington Phoenix fans to see, hopefully. But it's down to us as players on the pitch. We've got all the tools given to us every day, but it's down to us to deliver.
I want to delve into that a little bit deeper if I can. We were just talking before the podcast started and I said, oh, you know, you're going to have to get used to a lot of travel. And you said, well, you know, it's a mentality sort of thing. And clearly Mark has brought you in to be a leader, to bring that hard-nosed professionalism, if you like. And you were saying something interesting to me about the way that you've prepared in pre-season, very much in tune with modern tactical trends, not just in Australia and New Zealand, but overseas as well. You give us a bit of insight into all that.
Yeah, I think when people mention, I get asked quite a bit, you know, people say you got to realise a lot of travelling you're going to be doing. You know, you're in New Zealand, you got to travel all the time. And for me, that's all in your head, because back in the UK, there's 6.5-hour bus journeys to games. And then you go to play. And there might be some players who are being a negative kind of, I call it like a sheep affection. If someone says, oh, negative, it bounces around and becomes a virus.
Yeah.
But what we're very lucky is here, we've got everybody who stays positive. It's a flight, 2.5, 2 hours, 3 hours max to certain places out here. And I think it's all in your head. For me, when you go to these sort of places and people overlook it, and it's no excuse. I think you go out there and it's about your character mentally. How do you deal with it? And just turn it to a positive. It's going to be bad for them when they come here. And that's how you want to look at it. But for me, I don't see that as any issue. You want to see the travelling back home, and there's last year I played 52 games. You got two games in 3 days back there. You're up and down the country. Here you got flights, you get looked after a lot better and better hotels. You've got all the tools given to you, so there's literally there's no excuses.
And the training as well, you mentioned that Mark Rudin has had you doing what you labelled fatigue training.
Yeah, literally, he's testing the boys there mentally and putting them under pressure, something that they've never been took out of their kind of comfort zone. And also myself, the training has been very difficult. the hill runs, the lads have been on the first day when I came to meet the first team, like your first day at school, getting to know everybody, and it's always a nerve-wracking day, but first day going to see the kind of training that Mark wants to introduce to the players and test them out mentally. And he said, listen, looking back to the Wellington Phoenix, going back years, there's always been a problem with certain things, and he wants to learn, obviously, his experience. He's a winner. He knows what works, and he's played the A-League. And he knows the individual, what the players should be reaching. So he's testing us, and I think mentally he's testing us in the games as well. We went to the Gold Coast, and the train out there was intense. But the lads got to cope with it, and they cope with it great. There's no moaning. They got on with it. There's players who had nothing else in the tank, and that's what he wants. And then he's testing them, can you deliver more? And we're training like we're in extra time in the training matches. And it's like, you see the lads at the end, they've got nothing else to give. Back to the training ground, and I tell you what, that was a tough session.
But you were saying that that's a very big part of modern football. You know, you said a lot of games are won in the last 2-3 minutes of games, or even, you know, added time. So it's finding that mental toughness and that extra gear, isn't it, to be able to win games. Perhaps that's something that Wellington haven't done in the recent past.
I think it's everywhere you go around the world, last 5-10 minutes of games, a lot of goals are conceded, a lot of goals are scored, and for us, that's a big part of it, making sure you're mentally strong. It's all about concentration and drilling in the young boys who are coming in now. You're not boys, you're men now. You know, you've got to be a leader yourself. You're coming in the big boy league, and if you don't deliver, you're out the side. It's simple as that. You know, we're quite a small squad, so the manager's made it very clear. If we're not doing the right stuff, you're out the side. You demand high standards, and the way we're playing is high intense and putting pressure on people and taking the game to a lot of teams, I think, this year. Maybe in the past they haven't done that, but we're here to set a statement.
Great to hear. We're going to get on to sort of your life and times in the Premier League in a moment and look back a little bit. But just to finish off this Phoenix section of the chat, on a personal level, how do you envisage your matchups ahead of the season? Because there are some top quality strikers that have come into the league. Ola Toivonen and Sim De Jong, Adam Lafondra, who you probably know from the UK, Case several Honda. More as well.
Honda.
Keisuke Honda. I mean, those battles on an individual level, how much are you relishing those? And then what sort of goal, if you have, has the team set for the season?
It doesn't matter what player I play against. I'll give everyone the same respect like I have all my career. I go out there to defend and be the best I possibly can and help my team win the game and doing what it takes to win the game. That's all I care about, going on the pitch and win. I don't care who is on the pitch. For me, they're just names. But I will show everyone respect 100%. But it's about the team for me. And I just want us to win.
Well said. Not much more to it than that. All right, let's take a look back at your time with Newcastle, because it's a wonderful contribution that you've made to that football club and a very big club, regardless of where they're sitting in the leagues in England. Anyone who's had the privilege of being there, and Simon, you and I have, it's
many
a juggernaut. It's a juggernaut. 13 years at Newcastle, over 200 appearances, you know, and then some. You captained the club as well. I mean, yeah, Simon and I have. In fact, we went to a game together there, didn't we?
We did.
You probably played in it. It was
2012.
Yes.
It was the last but one game of the season, being a Man City fan, of course. It was the day that Yaya Toure scored twice, and City then had to just beat QPR on the last
the
day.
The famous Aguero game. Did you play in that game when Toure scored?
Yes, I think I did, yeah.
All right.
Absolute machine.
We'll digress for a moment, because Simon Simon's a massive Man City fan.
Yeah.
Now, before the game, we're sitting in the press box, but for people who don't know, the media areas at football grounds in the UK are very different to the ones in Australia. There's no glass. You're not cordoned off. We were sitting amongst the Geordies. Now, before the game, Simon, being a big Man City fan, said to me, Garby, if we score today, you've got to hold me down because I won't be able to control myself. I've said, Simon, for goodness sake, just control yourself, please, because they're going to rip my head off if you get up and start cheering. And as the game goes on and it gets a bit more tense, and he's getting worried because City hadn't scored, and if they hadn't got all 3 points, United would have been in the box seat, etc. And then Yaya Toure's put that in the back of the net, and he's about to jump up, and I'm just holding his arm down saying,
he saved my life.
And my own, I think, because they would have ripped my head off as well. But that gives you an insight into what that football club is like. It is just, they're such passionate football fans. It's such a wonderful stadium. What's it like playing for that club through the ups and the downs for such a long period of time?
I'm very lucky to obviously play for my hometown club when I was a young kid. My dad took me to the games. My dad ended up buying a bond. I think it was about £500 to get your name on the seat. I think it was like kind of father and son kind of bond that you had, and go to every home game, got the scarves on, the black and white shirt on, and the passion. You go there one day believing and one day wishing. You go on that pitch and playing in front of 52,000 screaming Geordies. And that was always being my dream, and I always visualised one day doing it. And I thought I'd get lucky one day, I was the ball boy. But I think there's a thing where Les Ferdinand scored the goal. There's a picture took, I'm behind the goal with him, and then making my debut out of 52,000 fans running on that pitch. But having the kind of like the fan support where everyone lives, breathes, eats football in the whole city, it is a phenomenal football nation. The Geordies, it's everywhere. I come out to Australia and New Zealand, I've got Newcastle fans in Wellington working in the cafe who's been there, and it's incredible how many people have come out here, and the support that I've had out here is it's been unbelievable. But for me to do something, I live my dream, and still to this day living and doing what I love, and I sometimes pinch myself, you know, when I put my shirt on, that my mates who are just lads who I've been to school with since I was 6 years old, and they've come and seen the great times where we're in Europe.
Yep.
And they were the days when Bobby Robson was there, leaving school at 16 years old. And he throws you straight in the first team against Alan Shearer, getting absolutely battered day in, day out. For 2 years, I had his flipping elbows in my face. But that kind of grew me, and I kind of like toughened me up. I think being around them experienced players, I always liked to be around it was like the 30-year-old players. It was Gary Speed, Alan Shearer, Shea Given, Jonathan Woodgate. And I'd always want to be around them and seeing what they do every day. What's their daily habits and what do they do after training? I want to be out there doing the extras. What's he doing? I wanted to kind of like look at them as my role model, looking at Gary Speed and the likes of Alan Shearer, what they do. And I was just hungry for it every day. And then I got the opportunity. Bobby Robson rings me up. Listen, Tony Adams, your idol, he's now manager of Wycombe Wanderers. He wants you on loan. I want to send you there for experience. So you're going to play in League Two against animals. It's going to be very physical. You're a 17-year-old boy. I want to toughen you up. Sends me out there. There's this skinny 17-year-old boy, goes on that pitch against all these monsters, 6'4", 6'5", animals. Just want to absolutely smash you. But that toughens you up, and you kind of get smart in the football game and how to deal with that kind of characters. Because when I'm going down to League Two, I'd never understood what it meant to a lot of these players where they relied on a win to pay their mortgage because they got a bonus. I was only used to playing the reserve team football against players who were looked out of favour at their clubs. So when they were playing the reserve, they would sack it off. So I wasn't really testing myself against these sort of players, you know. Going into League Two and getting the experience from lower down definitely helped me in my development, to give me that kind of belief and desire for when I got back, saying, listen, knocking on the gaffer's door all the time, you got to play. There was times when I was, just before I made my debut, I believed I should be playing. So I'm that anger, I was going to go into Bobby Robson's office and get my words out, my frustration. Listen, I want to be playing this, that and the other. I've opened the door, gone in his office. Before I even open my mouth, he's got his arm around us and he's talked about something completely different. And I walked out the office with him, and I don't know how he's done it, but that was kind of the man management that he had, and he kind of gave me the belief. There's certain players in your squad that need a kick up the backside. There's some players that need an arm around them. Mm. And it was just amazing to have a manager like that to kind of give us that self-belief of, listen, when you go out there, you get that one chance. And these Newcastle fans can eat you alive. Yeah. I've seen it with a lot of high-profile players who come to St. James Park who just crumble. You know, the training ground players who, when they go past the white line on the St. James Park pitch, the fans eat them up. If they don't deliver, don't work hard, you're out the door. They won't accept you. So one of the biggest things is getting the opportunity, taking it. And that's something that I did, and I was very fortunate. But yeah, I definitely lived my dream there, and playing there for a certain amount of years, I just couldn't believe it. And still hungry to this day. And I always keep in contact with the staff back there, the players back there. And it was some great times. And I just want to see the club back to the European days, because that's when the best nights I've ever had. Going to the UEFA Cup semi, it was a quarterfinals twice. And off to the semi-final of the FA Cup, you'd got that travelling, testing yourselves against the best players in the world. And for me, it was an unbelievable experience. One thing I never thought as a young kid I'd actually get that opportunity doing. But yeah, just down to hard work and effort. And that's one thing I'll always give, is my 100% effort in games, and never back down off a challenge.
Magic.
Two-part question, Steve. First of all, as a local kid, and obviously you've just outlined how much you understand the Geordie Nation, what Newcastle United means to the local people, does that make it easier for you to slot into that first team, or does it make it more difficult because you know what that club means because you're one of them. And as you said, it can crush people who come in from the outside. And maybe they have a different view of, you know, the job for of playing for Newcastle United. Maybe it's just a job for them. So is it more difficult or is it easier? And the second part of the question, slightly differently, who were the best players you played with and against?
I think for me, it's a hard one because when you go in, you leave school, going in, people say, "Oh, give the young lads a chance, give the young lads a chance." And I've seen it over my, when I was a fan from 9 years old up to 16 years old, there'd be young players get the opportunity in the cup games and then they would never be seen again. There's some people who just get scared of the big stage of 52,000. I'm all right in a reserve team when there's only a couple of thousand watching. Oh, the cameras are on. Oh, there's a lot buckled under kind of pressure. I love that kind of pressure. I love being tested. I love a challenge. And that's one thing I've always relished, is just giving me my opportunity. And I always remember when Graham Souness said it as well. He goes, you look a player, but can you deal with it? 52,000 on your back. You know, I see you doing your reserves and this, that and the other, but can you deliver for me? That's what I want to know. And that's what I kind of loved. And I think for me is the fans are always appreciate someone who's always going to give it their all, basically. Leave nothing on the pitch. As long as you look at your teammates and say, "I've given everything I have." But I think for me, I've left there with fantastic supporters to this day and now, speaking to a lot of fans. And I didn't want to let anyone down, like your family, your friends who all come to watch. You don't want to let anyone down that pitch. There's eyes on you. You cannot like hide. You're in the arena there and they're going to be criticising you if you're not delivering. So that's one thing you've got to deliver week in, week out. And it's all right for doing it 1 week, but you have to do it every single week.
So, yeah.
And that's the second part of the question there. The best player I played with, I think, makes no... Look at Alan Shearer, his goals. I think that's obviously... But obviously, there's a player, Johan Cabaye, in front of me. He was like a quarterback. Every time I gave him the ball, his passing range would always set up the likes of Hatem Ben Arfa, Demba Ba, Papi Cisse. We went on a fantastic run. I think we were top of the league up until December. We ended up finishing fifth.
Under Alan Pardew,
Yeah, and that's the year we probably should have invested instead of selling the players because we had a great squad. And we were taking the game to teams, beating Chelsea. They'd never been beaten all season. They come to St. James Park and, we beat them. I think it was a 3-2. But there's that kind of the fortress that you want. And that's something I want to build here at Wellington, is making the home as very difficult as possible for teams to come to. And we made that in Newcastle very special.
Who was the player you played against that you most feared, or not perhaps feared, but... You had a tough game against.
Always a tough game against Ruud van Nistelrooy. Mm. He's one person who always sticks out in my mind coming against. He's just a very intelligent player. I think when you play against him, very, very difficult. Always had a hard, hard afternoon with him.
Thought you might have gone Thierry Henry.
So we always had pretty good results against Arsenal. Okay. And we always seemed to do all right. But I think maybe they underestimated us, took it lightly for some reason. But we just got stuck in against them. But I always found Ruud van Nistelrooy, for me, was the very hard striker to play against.
While we're on the subject of players, I want to ask you about the Aussies you played with. A couple come to mind off the top of my head. Obviously, Mark Viduka.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in Newcastle, when I was there and you're in cabs going to the games and you're an Aussie and you ask them, what do you think of Viduka? Very mixed responses over there. Some people scathing because he didn't quite get to the levels that obviously he had been at and that we know he was capable of.
Yeah.
What did you make of Dukes, both as a player and also as a person?
Loved him as a person and as a player, because when you train against him, he's telling you what to do. Don't let me touch you. If I touch you, I've got you. He was very good at rolling defenders. For a big man, he was very good with his feet. Mm. So for me, for a young lad still learning the game, good to have against a player who is willing to take his time out in the training sessions and is telling you what he doesn't like a defender doing to him. And obviously positional player where obviously his experience against the best defenders he's played against is just learning from that kind of caliber of player. I think he's just, he was a phenomenal person. Off the pitch, always had time for you. Always had time for the young boys coming in the reserve team dressing room, sitting there with a cup of tea, trying to get involved with the young boys. And I think for the young lads growing up, seeing that kind of player do that, it does give you a lift. And there's not many players in the modern day football would do that. And I think that's kind of the old school kind of era has gone out the game a little bit.
The other one I wanted to ask you about is Curtis Good, because Curtis went to Newcastle with a lot of hype around him and then had a horrible injury run. He's now back in Australia, signed with Melbourne City. What do you make of Curtis's journey and his struggle, most importantly, through his injuries?
It was so unlucky for him. I think he had opportunities where he was going to play. He got his injuries. He had big injuries as well. I think his hips, he had massive injuries. But the games that he did play, he's an animal on the pitch. And you can see on the ball as well, very comfortable and cultured. And for us left-sided centre-half on the ball, it's fantastic. Something that Newcastle never really had. We always had like a right footer playing on the left. And when he played, he was a solid defender. And I think he got a lot of opportunities in the League Cup where he was playing against League 2, League 1 teams. And never shy out with challenge. And it's great to see him back to full fitness and back at the top. And I want to see him do well. You know, for someone who came to Newcastle, I just want to give him that opportunity. And what a player. And I must think he's actually a great lad as well to be around. And I wish him all the best.
I want to ask you about one more incident back during your time at Newcastle. One of the most infamous ones. Because you were involved in something in this game where you handled the ball and you were sent off, but everyone forgets about it because Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer came to fisticuffs as teammates in the middle of the game. What on earth was that football match like? What was it like in the dressing room afterwards?
Do you know what? It all started the day before in training. So we had like on a Friday, we always play for yellow jersey. So everyone, we always have a little game. I think it's like 3 7-minute games. And for some reason, they were missing a lot of chances and they said, I'm not going to pass you. You don't finish. And it was all this kind of, you know, I don't know if it was an ego thing at the time or whatever it was, but we got to the game day on Saturday and during the game, they wouldn't pass to each other. But just before this, Nicky Butch dwelled on the ball and he's dwelled too much. Darius Vassell took the ball off him. And I'm the only person there. I've had to run back past Shea Given. So Darius Vassell's gone past Shea Given. I'm on the goal line. There's nobody else around apart from Darius Vassell, one-on-one with me. I've gone one way. He's hit the ball just a bit too high. It's hit my hand. And as an 18-year-old kid, you're trying everything not to get sent off. And I didn't realise how close the referee was. In my head, I thought he was further down the pitch and I thought I got away with it. And he was literally about 15 yards away. And when I got that red card, it was the worst feeling. My first professional red card. And obviously, that's St. James Park. But getting a standing ovation for that, I couldn't understand why the fans give us it to this day still, but I think they had a laugh if obviously the antics that went on. I've gone down the tunnel into the dressing room and have my head in my hands going, what the hell's just happened there? Had a shower, got my suit back on, sitting in the change room and just thinking, I'm going to get absolutely battered. And I didn't know which player was coming for me first. It was the manager, Graham Souness. And I tell you what, when their heads go, they go. They're old school. And literally, I was thinking, oh, no. Then I heard the studs coming through down the tunnel into the dressing room. Two of the players were two security guys. And I'm looking going, what the bloody hell's going on here, by the way? Lee Bowyer's coming. He's got his shirt ripped. Thinking in my head, right, Lee Boy's obviously had a fight with one of their players on the pitch and Kieran Dyer, as a teammate, helped them out and looked after him, you know? Until I heard, you can't punch from Lee Bowyer to Kieran Dyer. And I'm thinking, what the hell's going on here? So I've walked into the players' lounge where it's obviously got the plasma in there, looking on the screen. And when I've seen what's going on, I'll be honest with you, I was absolutely delighted.
Brilliant.
Because they've took the pressure right off me. Because after the game, I was literally just back in the corner there going, I'll tell you what, I'm staying well out of the way of this. And the pressure was off me. The manager came in, got them two out with the media, explain yourselves. And the next day it was all about them. And nothing said about me until I think Soccer AM continuously played the clips. And even to this day, I come out here, the Wellington, the Aussies, They love playing that kind of clip of us. And it was good fun looking back now, but at the time it was horrible. I tell you that now. I felt tiny, man. I was like, oh, I can't believe this.
What a magnificent story. Stuff. That's a great way to finish, I think, looking at you personally. You've got a bit more time to stick around for Absolutely. The Premier League chat. We've got 100%. Some questions from fans as well. Our question segment was very much focused on you. So some questions from the supporters too. But let's talk about the Premier League from the weekend and how things are tracking right now. We might as well start with Newcastle. Solid result on the weekend, a 0-0 draw. So things seem to have stabilised a little bit under Rafa. What do you make of the way they're going this season?
Yeah, speaking to the players at the start of the season, I think adding to the likes of with Rondon coming in, it's something I think they've missed. He gives that pace and power in behind. I think when Rafa gets him fully fit, he's going to be a problem for a lot of defenders out there. I've played against Rondon in his top draw. He's very good and something I think Newcastle missed last year. We probably had too many who didn't run in behind, and this season now it's been something different. It was hard. I think the players and the teams we've been playing against, we've played against the top six. It's been difficult for them, but there's games where, you know, we had a lot of chances. They just haven't took them. But Crystal Palace, the likes of Zaha, in how well he's been doing lately. For me, it was a big point. And make sure you just don't lose against the team that's going to be in around the bottom half of the season. That's going to be the biggest test for Rafa this season. And Hopefully can get to January and add a couple of players, freshen the squad up and just give that a little bit of injection for the final part of the season. So for me, they did so well last year. You know, they're underdogs and people didn't expect them to do what they did. And hopefully they can do the same there again this year.
I guess the result of the weekend was Wolves points at Manchester United. I mean, not so much a negative for mine on United because they've got back into a run of good form, but that's massive from Wolves, isn't it? They're going to be a bit of a force.
Yeah, you look at the investment that's gone into them. You know, I think Mendes, Ronaldo's agent's doing a lot of dealing with the Portuguese, but they're both very smart. They're both players who have come in with points to prove, haven't had much game time in the clubs, and they're hungry and they're playing a fantastic way of football. The manager's got them playing and they've captured a few teams off guard and they're looking a real force at the moment.
What's your take on Jose Mourinho at Manchester United and where they're at the moment as a club?
The media's obviously on, I think, Jose Mourinho at the moment with the results of late, and I don't think the Wolves game has helped them. The media's, I think, they're trying to rattle his cages, but I think he's always remembered by his success with the clubs he's been to, and something's just not right at the moment with whatever is going on. But I think that's something that Man United fans, they want to see some exciting football back in the day. I know when I was playing against Man United, it was never an easy game, and you go to Old Trafford and it was a fortress there. It was a tough one. I think they need to get that kind of fear factor back.
Apart from St James's, was that your favourite away ground to play at in the Premier League or not?
No, my favourite away ground was Sunderland. You know, having 46,000 absolutely hammering me all game, yeah. I love that. And kind of that was my kind of cup of tea, where you go somewhere where you absolutely hate it. 46,000, the veins are popping out and they're giving it everything to you. That, for me, was more than going to the likes of Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal. I love the kind of hatred, as well as the love that you get with the Newcastle. So you have the great and you have the horribleness, which is good.
Big win for Arsenal, four in a row for them. Spurs got back to winning ways, crucially, despite Matt Ryan's best efforts for Brighton. Chelsea dropped points for the first time this season. West Ham have stabilised, haven't they? But Liverpool and City both cruised. City 5-0 against Cardiff. Liverpool are 3-0 at home to Southampton. They are the pace setters now, perfect to start the campaign. Best start in their history, 126-year history. First time they've ever won their first seven games to start a season. What do you make of Liverpool and where they're at now? Do you think this is the time where they might be able to break that drought?
They're very confident. I speak to Gini Wijnaldum and he was just saying the way Klopp has got them playing at a very high tempo, high press kind of game, and they're very well drilled. You know, the training that he says they're doing, everyone's all week, just preparation. If they've got an 8 o'clock kickoff, they're training 8 o'clock. So it's the way that Klopp's got them playing. I think he did the same at Dortmund. So it's quite interesting to see his methods. And it's from Monday, whoever they're playing on the Saturday, all that week, they're just continuing. Preparation is just about that team. The next week, right, what we've got here. So every game's different and the personnel is different as well for what is needed for them. But yeah, I think look at last year, they're getting the Champions League, the final. How well they probably could have won it. They had the chances to do it if Salah had stayed on, and I think, you know, but yeah, they're looking at force.
Next few weeks, Liverpool have got Chelsea twice, once in the Cup, I think.
Yep.
Is that right?
League Cup.
Yep. Then they've got Napoli away in the Champions League, and they've got Man City to come at Anfield. Now, that is shaping as already the biggest game of the season. Now, we know what happened last year between Liverpool and City. Do you think that Guardiola might even tweak the way he plays, given he'll remember what happened to his City team last year? They got blown away in the opening half an hour, that high press, that fast attacking, particularly down the flanks. Will he tweak his system and his personnel to try and counter that this season?
100%. I think, look at last season, the way that I think Pep Guardiola was set up, he was trying to still play. And I think he's realised that against that, you've got to give him that more respect, because the players that they've got the energy, they're very well drilled, the pace, the power that they've got. And if you give them a chance, they will hurt you. They've got goals from all over the pitch now. They haven't just relied on Salah. They've invested very well. And I think looking at the players, they've got legs who I think can hurt physically as well. I think toe-to-toe, it's going to be an interesting one. But for me, Liverpool's looking the favourites this season.
I like the sound of that, Steve. Thank you very much
as a
Reds fan.
We'll see.
Let's get into the question segment. It's been a fascinating chat. Thoroughly enjoyed listening to everything, both on Wellington and from your time at Newcastle. But some of the fans want to ask some questions as well. We do this every week.
Yep.
And the fans on Twitter throw a few to us. And also, because we said you're our special guest, a few for you. One from Kylan, a simple one, maybe. Your favourite pre-game tune to pump yourself up or style of music?
Well, to be fair, I think with me, it's just whatever in the charts. I do like the Despacito kind of song. I used to always have that playing all the time, and it gets me going. But yeah, whatever's in the charts. I'm never really one of these that superstition. I've got to play the same song. But our change room so far, the lads have got some good music going on, so I can't complain there.
From Tyson, you can only pick one: Gerrard or Lampard.
Gerrard.
Yes,
I like Gerrard. Yeah.
Are you good mates with either one of them?
No, I've said no. I know them as players, but I think Gerrard's my favourite.
One from Tom McCall. We've already asked about a punch-up, so I'm not sure how this one's going to go down. You've got to ask him, he says, about your training ground punch-up with Andy Carroll.
No, a lot of people have always a suspicion of all this kind of stuff. There's like arguments all the time, but we've had like arguments with different players, and people only, I think the groundsmen have seen stuff and they're trying to leak stuff out. And I think there was stuff with certain French players as well, but there was all the kind of suspicion. I think the media were banned from the training ground a lot, and they were just trying to cause a lot of problems.
So that never happened?
No, not that. There was a lot of arguments. We had a lot of arguments on the pitch, a lot of shouting and stuff like that, but we don't have, nothing that's got leaked out.
You didn't even pull his hair?
No. It wasn't his. It's been longer hair being pulled, but not his.
And we had several people asking the same question, and I wanted to ask it as well. I'm sure Simon did, but we thought we'd leave it right to the question segment.
We saved the best to last.
Yeah.
Mike Ashley. What's it like with Mike Ashley at the club? What do you make of him as an owner?
As a businessman, you can't knock him. You know, he's successful in his own right with Sports Direct, but with Newcastle, for what we've been doing over the years, I remember when Freddie Shepherd was there, he gave the fans what they wanted. You know, you look at the every Friday, we have the local paper, always back page, a star signing was going to come here. He gave the fans that kind of belief, top name signing. He hasn't gone the same sort of way. He's gone more, I think, profit. So he's always looked at bringing players and making a profit. That's how he wants to run it. You can't argue with it. But for the fans, it's been frustrating. You know, all since, I think, the last 5-6 years, it was continuous against the crowd, against the owner, and it was always going to be difficult. But for me, for whatever issue, that's his issue. All we can do on the pitch is play. And we always kept ourselves out of it and just concentrate on our football, because at the end of the day, we can't change that.
How long does Rafa Benitez put up with that situation?
I don't know. That's something you're going to have to ask him. And that's something he always kept to himself. He never let it affect him. He always protected his players. And when he came in for the back end of the season, I honestly believed if he had longer, Newcastle would have stayed up. He kind of gave that fear, the factor where the fans wanted that kind of that buzz, the kind of loving again that they had with Sir Bobby Robson, Kevin Keegan. Where that respect, he's built back a massive Geordie fan base again with the singing culture, the atmosphere is now, I don't know if you've seen the stadium's rocking now, but with Mike Ashley and Rafa Benitez, I don't know what the situation is off the field, but I know all the time he'll always protect his players and he'll always keep it in-house and concentrate on the players, and not everyone always talks about that. I think fans, it's always a situation for the media guys to talk about, but as players, we just get told, listen, just concentrate on your football and you can't let this affect you.
Who was the best manager you ever had?
I think I've ever had Sir Bobby Robson. I think he's just man management. In this modern day football, it's very rare you see a lot of the managers now knowing how to deal with certain players' egos, their mentality, the characters. I think a lot of people might say, oh, but he's got this badge. Badges mean nothing. If you can't deal with a player one-on-one, how to understand him and how to get the best out of him. And that's one thing Sir Bobby Robson did. He knew how to get the best out of the players. He had a lot of egos. You know, there's a lot of, we had the tackles that were flying every day. They were feisty, but he let the lads police it for themselves. And we had good leaders in the squad who we dealt with situations in the training ground. And you need that feistiness going around, and it's healthy. You know, sometimes when you're going through a bad patch, it's keeping everybody on board, and he just knew how to make everyone tick. And for me, it's very hard to, in modern day football now, with the power of a lot of agents and players, some people can't take the criticism. And he was just very honest. If you weren't playing, he would bring in the office a few days before, tell you why you're not playing. a lot of managers kind of beat around the bush and they don't know how to deal with a professional footballer, like a mentality. They're like, oh, I don't know how to deal with this character. How do I tell him? I just won't tell him. I won't speak to him. Certain managers speak to, they deal with things in a different way. But for me, I'll never forget the way he's treated his players. That's why he's got the almost respect from every player. And I don't think anyone would have a bad word to say about him who's worked under him.
Hopefully you're saying that about Mark Rudin come absolutely, the end of your time at the Wellington Phoenix. Yeah. Wouldn't that be good? Steve Taylor, thank you so much for stopping
brilliant.
In. It's been a fantastic chat, really enlightening, and I'm certain that everyone listening has thoroughly enjoyed this. Best of luck
thank you very much.
With the season ahead with the Wellington Phoenix. They've had some tricky times, but everything sounds pretty positive, no doubt, and hopefully we're seeing you winning plenty of games throughout the campaign. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you very
by.
Much. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks,
you.
Steve.
Simon Hill,
cheers.
Thanks to you as well.
Pleasure.
That's been
good
the Fox Football podcast for this week. Thanks to everyone for listening. Trust you enjoyed that. All the best. Stay safe.